If you're at the start of your wine export journey, trying unsuccessfully to find the right import partner, I may have something that can help. As host of Interpreting Wine, I've interviewed 166 winemakers, 20 Masters of Wine, 26 International Sommeliers, and 31 importers from the UK, US, and Austria. So I know a thing or two about what it takes to engage the wine trade, who make up 70% of my audience. I'm offering the chance to discover your export readiness score. Take the test and you'll receive a personalized report outlining how to increase your winery's impact in your target markets. All for free, and it takes less than 3 minutes. Just visit interpretingwine.com/exportready and take the wine export scorecard today. That's interpretingwine.com/exportready. Today's episode of the podcast features me, Lawrence, in conversation with Choba Todd of Noble Green Wines. This features the audio from an Instagram Live that Choba and I did together on the 22nd of October and shows how anyone doing an Instagram Live can turn their appearance into a free piece of audio content. For this particular Instagram Live, each one of us chose a different drink, both settling on USA Pinot Noirs. I went with the Big Table Farm 2017 Sunnyside Vineyard Pinot Noir, and Choba went with the Ford Cellars Finger Lakes Classic Pinot Noir, also 2017. Before we opened out the discussion with an updated origin story, we spoke about Gary Vaynerchuk as an inspiration, the current state of podcasting, my visit earlier this year to the Willamette Valley, where I met Claire Carver of Big Table Farm, adaptation to my recording process during COVID-19, and the recent Interpreting Wine Hospitality Summit 2020. Enjoy. The winery is called Big Table Farm, and they are based, their physical location is in the Yamhill Carlton ABA of Oregon. I'm going to say already, I'm going to like miss out so much of the story, but the episode, I was literally just checking, the episode that I did with Claire Carver, who is the wife of the winemaker, it's actually the fifth most ever listened to episode of, you know, of all the episodes that I've done, it's the fifth most episode, and she is the most incredible storyteller. So in our interview together, she goes into depth of how they relocate to the region, fell in love with the region, originally were based in Napa Valley. There's a whole half an hour story that she goes into about that. So interpretingwine.com/385. So that is to get the full, you know, 1 hour in-depth version, which I listened to back the other day. But I'll just really, I think, yeah, rather than trying to summarize the whole story, I'll just throw out one element, which I think is like archetypal of them. And because Claire is an artist and she paints, and then she works with a printer to get these labels done every year. Yeah. And each label is basically representative of the wine. So this particular wine is the 2017 Sunnyside Vineyard. So it's, you know, play on words with Sunnyside. So it's always got chickens on the label, but that's the 17. And I didn't realize this at the time. Claire sent me a card and a t-shirt, a little while ago, but that's actually the label for the 2018. So every year they change the label, and then they spend, I think it's a couple of weeks, putting every label onto the bottle by hand. And
proper artisan stuff.
My goodness. Yeah. It's, I mean, we hear so much around the wine itself being an expression of the year and capturing what happened in the year. But they even go as far as the label captures what happened that year. So the label changes depending on what they saw, really, I guess, what Claire saw and what she was inspired by through the year. So I've got the right glassware, and this is the same. Been open for an hour or so, so it's nicely brilliant. Opened up now. Yeah, so cheers.
Cheers. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Basically, a lot of people know about you as, you know, the guy who does the podcast, Interrupting Wine, and all that. But as far as I know, the psychology degree, did you end up in the wine trade?
I've got the backup of. I was actually interviewed on the podcast in episode 100. So you've got literally like the hour long version, you know, if you can sort of put up with me talking for an hour about myself and about podcasting. But I guess long story short, how I got started. I mean, there's a really, really, you know, short term element. And then there's a slightly longer term element. As you say, I'm a qualified business psychologist, and really, I guess, have had another life, really, a whole other career as a business psychologist, and worked in the UK and in Dubai and in lots of kind of different roles, and really enjoyed it. But I think I'm the sort of person, I'll always want to be like as happy as possible, and I'll always want to be kind of engaged, you know, in what I'm doing. So I've never been afraid to sort of change and maybe make a move that kind of surprises people, and people think is like, well, you know, what's he doing? And that was really, you know, the wine fascination, really. I guess it took a lot of people by surprise, because I didn't grow up really being much into wine, and it was really meeting producers, really. I think that was the first thing, and I had my first, you know, major exposure to them when I was living over in Madrid. So I also speak Spanish. I think Garrett's on the call. He's one of my co-conspirators in the Madrid tasting group, which I started when I was living over there, and that was, you know, 2017, and very much, you know, still, you know, didn't really know much at all about wine, and, you know, and realized it was this sort of daunting subject to try and learn about it. So, as I say, I'm not afraid to sort of dive in there at the deep end. And I was in Madrid on a 6 month contract, and kind of went there to learn Spanish or really kind of improve my Spanish, because I'd been learning for a few years, and then. You know, I wanted to stay on, because Madrid is a fantastic place if you've never been before. And I got an opportunity to go for a job as a as a social media guy for a tapas tour company. So that would let me work in English in Spain, in Madrid, you know, which it was kind of the best of both worlds. And I thought, okay, what's going to be my secret weapon? I always like to think, okay, what's the thing that I can bring that no one else can bring to the table, no one else is going to have, and let me just sort of, you know, slay the competition. So I thought the thing to do would be to have a podcast. And as I say, I'd you know, kicked around wine for a little while, and had met a few producers, and, you know, loved the scene over in Spain. And just thought, okay, let me just go and do it. So that was the short-term push, really, to get it. I was like, I'm going to go to this interview, and I'm going to have a podcast, and they're going to like hire me for sure.
There you go. So you're very young in the industry in that sense.
I guess you'd say my time in the industry started when I pressed upload on that first podcast. And it only just passed 3 years, actually. I'm just three years old in the industry. So it was the 24th of September 2017 when I did that first episode. And I went to try and get the job, told them about the podcast, and of course they didn't hire me.
Yes.
But maybe luckily they didn't hire me. So let's see.
So if I'm not giving away too much of a secret, you actually applied for a job at Noble Greens, if I'm if I believe. Apparently, you were way too overqualified for the position. So someone else got the position. I don't know if who was it, but I don't know if that person is still with us. But anyway, we just lost out on you
So near yet so far, hey? But yeah, no, this is it, you know, because it's, you know, you just, I think, yeah, it's an industry that a lot of people, obviously a lot of people like wine and a lot of people like the idea of working in it. I think, yeah, maybe the slightly longer term motivation and the reason why I've kind of gone for it as well is that I very much like to go my own way. I'd rather kind of try to make my own field, if you like, or, you know, make my own sort of area, my own sort of game that I can play, rather than competing with everybody else to sort of, you know, try and play in the same competitive waters. You know, I'll go and fish over in another side. It might be a bit longer to get there and a bit more secluded, the fishing spot, but yeah. Maybe there's no one else fishing there, so
yeah, you
get
number one. Just before we a couple of weeks ago when we spoke on the phone, and I said to you, basically, you were when I was like choosing the people who I like to talk to live Instagram, I thought you are a perfect person in a sense that at the moment, social media and wine is pretty much about Instagram. And
a lot, yeah.
TikTok is going to be in number two at some point.
Yeah.
I didn't start dancing just yet, so I'm not going to get into that sort of stage. But you were, you know, you were pretty much on the forefront of, at least in Britain, doing podcasts and these sort of things. So you went on the audio route rather than the sort of the visual version.
Oh, yeah.
You have quite a few followers on Instagram as well. And I think,
yeah.
You're just doing something a little bit different. Why did you choose just that particular thing? Did you work in radio or something before? Or?
Yeah. No, I've got a face for radio. This is the secret weapon. Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think in my story, I think the other missing piece as well, which is, you know, is totally part of the story as well. It's just that, you know, I guess a year or so before I started the podcast, I was really getting into and getting inspired a lot by there's a really loud entrepreneur over in New York called Gary Vaynerchuk. A lot of people in wine talk about him because he was pretty much the first person to start doing videos. I mean, you look back on his first videos. He did something called Wine Library TV back when,
yes,
you know, it
2006
was
2006 or something.
So yeah, so far back. And I remember when I first saw him, I thought this guy's a complete idiot. He never lets his guests talk. He was like so over the top. But it's easy to see that and think that's all he's about, that there is really a lot of more depth to it. And his big thing is like, he's trying to help people, which I think actually, you know, that really resonated with me because of, you know, coming from the psychology background as well. And he was like, look, okay. He's practical. He's like, look, karma is practical, you know, and you can use social media to amplify your message and really kind of help way more people than you ever could at any point, basically, in history. And for months and months and months, he was, in 2017, for months and months and months, and practically every day, he was like, people, you need to start a podcast. The opportunity is there. Go for it. Squeeze it with both hands. Go for it. And I kind of thought, oh, okay, if I'm, you know, kind of going into, this is maybe going forward a little bit in the story, but I thought, yeah, if I'm going into wine, there'll be other people that have seen Gary and seen his sort of encouragement to go and start a podcast. So I'd better sort of get out there and put my flag in the ground and do my sort of land grab, you know. And that was kind of why I went for it, I guess, in such a way where I did really so many, where I did, you know, I had a 2-month period where I did one podcast a day. You know, it was pretty extreme for a time. But I think, you know, and the question on Instagram, I think the interesting thing for me was that You know, I'm a believer that podcasting is social media, and that it's actually, just break down the words, you know, it's social. I take that as we, anybody can do it. You can, you know, tomorrow you can start a Noble Green podcast, you know. I'm sure you, I'm sure you haven't got enough things to do, so yes. You can add another thing. We'll see if your bosses listen to this back and ask you to be the star of that. But the point, you know, if you, like 10 years ago, if you'd wanted to start a radio show, where, you know, you can't just go onto BBC and start transmitting, you know, there's a barrier to entry there, whereas with audio, with social media, there's no barrier. You can just sort of go in there. So, and I just thought, look, okay, let me also build another audience at the same time, and basically, in a way, kind of send people backwards and forwards. You know, it's like when you get sick and tired of looking at my face or my selfies or my pictures, then go and listen to me. You know, when you're sick and tired of listening, or if you want to see what I look like, because a lot of people, I'll be at tastings and they'll recognize me from my voice and they're like, I know that voice. And it happened, like, even last week, you know, somebody was like, I know that voice. You sound familiar. And so it's nice to then have the visual. And then also, I think the main, you know, the home plate, which is the audio, definitely. And that's, I think, where I can do my thing.
Basically, you just, I had the second question lined up, and then you just screwed that.
I answered two for the price of one.
Yes, indeed. So my next question would be, did you have an inspiration, e.g. Gary Vaynerchuk, but you just answered it, that's cool. So yeah, I'm listening to him all the time as well, and I think he's brilliant, and I think... It's kind of obvious that he given you some sort of an...
One thing I would say, though, I mean, and you know, I guess there'll be lots of wine people watching this, and you know, people that you know are maybe even buy from you or work in the wine industry. I would just say, look, I've heard a lot of people talking about Gary Vaynerchuk in wine, but they only seem to talk about Wine Library TV, and the fact of the matter is that's around, what is it now, 8 years or so, I think, since he stopped doing that. It's been like a number of years. So yeah. He's really in another place now, you know. I think and that's my impression. That's what people have sort of said to me. They've only ever talked about Wine Library TV, and oh, he's great, he uses different words, and he spits into a New York Jets bowl, and you know, it's like really accessible. But basically, that is literally the tip of the iceberg. Like there is just like so much more, I think, to what he's talking about now, and he's even got like this sort of team of people around him now, which I'm sure you've seen. They have their own Instagram account. They share tips. They share like behind the scenes things, and there's just like there is a lot there. I think you know, overwhelm is definitely possible because he just puts out so many posts, and he's really doing it. He's really just like, look, one of his phrases is don't listen to what I'm saying, watch what I'm doing. You know, just try to copy, try to sort of keep up with me and see what I'm doing. He's just doing it. He's experimenting. And I really think that's like one of the main things that people in working in wine marketing can do. That, you know, just try stuff. It's like people can often seem a bit scared to do something different, you know. And I would personally say podcasting falls into that. I'm like shocked that there's not more podcasts out there. Yeah, it's like it's next to free. It's really not that complicated. I mean, disclosure. I'm recording my side of the conversation just in case there's anything, you know, it's a typical Gary Vaynerchuk move. Like I'm recording my side of the conversation in case I, you know, want to use this for anything. If there's any good stuff here. And it's like, you know, there's always an opportunity to create content, I think, and get your message out there. And audio is like, you know, it's basically, it's free. You know, I put together a kit guide, and it's still online. And I've seen quite a few people have gone and downloaded it, but it's at interpretingwine.com/kit, and it basically sets out all of the things that I've used to do like the first 400. I've had to upgrade a little bit in COVID times.
Basically, you just keep blowing my questions. I was going to ask you about this. It's a really cool thing what you're trying to do as well. You're trying to get other people to do what you're doing. It's sort of, yeah. you try to build a competition for yourself, but at the same time, you really not because you're doing it so well and you already.
This is it. No, I hope I'm not annoying the host by anticipating the answers. But I think it's good because I think, you know, we can sort of then get into the real, you know, maybe some of my deeper motivations and some of my, you know, my best tips and all the rest of it. But I've completely changed. I mean, I think it was between from memory episodes 20 and 80, I was like, look, I'm going to be the main man. I'm going to just get loads and loads and loads and loads of episodes out there, kind of so that nobody could catch me. That was really my motivation, and so that I would be the kind of go-to person. And I, as I said, I did one did 80, 60 days, 60 episodes, and it's just, you know, I'll never do that ever again, but it was like, okay, I sort of challenged myself to do it. But my mindset now, it could not be more different. You know, it really couldn't, because I realized that even if, you know, 50 other people had started podcasts that year, they would all have had a different take on the medium. You know, they're literally a different voice. You know, you sound different to me. You know, you evoke different feelings in the listeners, and you have a different, you know, questioning style, and you have different things going on in your head. You know, it's like, it's not just because it's another wine podcast, it's not going to be the same. You know, there are already so many out there and so many very successful ones, but we're all so different. And it's like, you know, you don't say, oh, there's enough series on TV, or there's enough movies ever in the world. There's always new movies being made. There's always new stuff coming out. You know, it's all because there's always new people coming along. So, yes. You know, there's always going to be new voices coming through. So I've totally gone 180 degrees, and I'm like, look, this is just such an exciting thing to be able to do. And it's like, when you really think about it, it's like my voice, you know, if I pay up my subscription on whatever platform it's like in 30 years time, you know, people could be hearing my voice and my guests and my interviews in 100 years time or 200 years time, and I, you know, that's kind of really, you know, a more meaningful motivation for me now. It's like, you know, these are just really cool people, like, you know, Claire Big Table and like all of the guys I met on that tour of the Willamette Valley, and all the people I've met right the way through.
Before you blow my next question, Willamette Valley. So how did the two come about, or what was the? Did you want to go to Oregon, or was it an opportunity to just do something with those guys? Or
yeah. Or so basically, I mean, maybe just to fill in a little bit. The story, you know, I think what has happened, you know, in terms of the development has been that there's been interest in certain wine boards, you know, wanting to access, I guess, my audience, because you know, I know that the audience is very much you know, trade focused, and I, you know, have sort of, you know, I delve more and more now into the statistics and see that, hey, you know, people will listen to around 60%, you know, on average of an episode, and that's like the, you know, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 50 minutes, it doesn't matter how long the episode almost is, so people will listen and people will get the message, and it's really that kind of intimate way of communicating as well. I think it's really, it's just like being at at a masterclass or at a tasting. It's something very much more in depth, I think, you know, ever than just like reading something and or watching like a 2-minute video, which you might see on kind of on YouTube. Certain boards, I mean, I think all these things, it's always just about, you know, is it the right time for them? Have they got the budget? Have they heard enough of what I'm doing? You know, do they sort of trust me to kind of almost tell their story on their behalf? And the Oregon was just somebody I was just sort of, yeah, I guess I stalked for for a few months, and I was just contacting them and just sort of, you know, I'm just making the suggestion because I saw that since I did a press trip to New York and did a lot of interviews over there, then my following in the States really picked up. So like in the first year, it was around 40% UK and 25% US. And now it's come right up. It's around 30% US, 30% UK, more or less.
Very soon you're going to move over to the United States because you have more followers there.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, I don't know. I think, you know, at the end of the day, you like to hear the accent of where you're from, don't you? You know, I think we're
That's not the case with me in this
I'm just so lucky that it happened when it did, because it happened over in January of this year. And then just being able to spend a week over there, you know, with, I had the invitation of the Willamette Valley Winery Association. You know, they're putting me in touch with all of their winemakers, and you know, I'm not always the best planner, you know, but it just felt like the schedule evolved, and you know, who kind of needed to be interviewed and who needed to be met and tasted with, you know, they kind of came about, and it ended up being 20 interviews in a week, you know, which was like blew my mind, because they're everybody down there is so eloquent, and they were like hour-long interviews each one. So I didn't sleep much when I came back, but I think it's just because I was just overwhelmed with all of the stories that they were telling me.
That's brilliant. And then you were lucky because it didn't happen during COVID, but basically it was before COVID.
Exactly. I was there I think 13th of January. It was so really, really early in the year, and then I was only there for a week, so I was back. Everything was back before there was even a hint that anything could sort of slow down. And but yeah, it was a shock. Yeah,
you sort of kept on going during COVID, I assume. How did it change things? Obviously, you can't actually go and see people much as you would before COVID. So, does it make any technical difficulties, or is it doable?
So, I release series of interviews. You know, I think I'm one of the few people that does that. I'll get on a topic, and then I'll do like, you know, with Oregon, 20 in a row. You know, it's like we'll really go around this topic. We'll really go in depth. And that's, again, that's me innovating over time and changing and evolving over time. And I don't think there's anybody else that does that. And I think that's the way to go, because it's like, look, you know, give people an hour, why not give them 20 hours? You know, they'll take what they need, you know, and kind of go from there. But interestingly, the last interview from Willamette Valley was number 399 on the podcast. And up until that point, up until 399, I'd done every single interview face to face. Every single one. It was with this same little mic, everything face to face. And then that episode brought me up to March. It brought me up to COVID. So it's like, okay, how do I start doing this now remotely? Because I don't want to stop. And then it was just, you know, I made, you know, small steps towards it. I did a couple of episodes. I felt like I didn't know what to do. I think, you know, March and April, it was just such a crazy time, and it's, you're like, okay, what do I, you know, there's only so much wine you can drink, I guess, to kind of help people out. And I was like, I've got a platform here, and I want to kind of get get some people on from the industry. So I knew a couple of people that I wanted to have on, and so you'll see for episode 400 is Nick at Graft, Nick Darlington at Graft Wine, and I'd interviewed him before. I knew he'd be very eloquent. I knew he'd be a great guest, and I felt, okay, I need to go with somebody I can trust if I'm doing this sort of remote thing. You know, it's like I have a lot less control, because at the time I got him to record the local part of the conversation and then share it back with me. And then I edited them together, so it kind of sounded like we were together. But that was the biggest innovation. And then 401, I got Dawn Davies on, who's like got sort of a bit of an, you know, Dawn Davies MW at the Whiskey Exchange. She's got like a bit of an open door into the podcast. She's been on that now four times, and she's just brilliant. She's just, you know, she's always seems to be doing something innovative or something to help the industry. And at that time, she was helping to organize an auction for the Drinks Trust. So people were donating bottles and they were raising money for their sort of hardship fund, I believe it was. So, yeah, so having her on. But then, yeah, you just sort of, then I guess you get used to recording remotely, and then, but you adapt, you know, you get new kit, and probably, you know, I bought more kit in the last 4 months than I had in the previous 4 years. So it's been an expensive time.
You changed the way how you record and everything, and I assume that basically opens up new doors for you, so you can actually do more stuff.
Yeah.
With people overseas. Or
this is it.
Things like that.
This is it. Yeah. Totally. I mean, I'd been a bit of a purist, I guess you'd say. You know, the kind of, yeah, let's try and bottle the conversation. You know, literally bottle it there by hand, if you like. Not wanting to use any technology, but then, yeah, going a bit remote. If anybody's looking to, so I've evolved quite a bit. I now use a tool called Squadcast. It's called Squadcast, I guess. Squadcast, and that is what you would use to basically get the best quality audio possible when you're recording remotely. So Instagram Live, I mean, look, you can take the audio from there, you know, that's fine. Zoom, the same, you know, it will record the audio, but the quality will always be kind of significantly lower. The best of all is if I've got a microphone and, say, you know, we were doing an interview, you had a microphone there, we use something, as I say, Squadcast would be my sort of, you know, tool of choice, and the quality is just that much better, and it almost does sound like you are together, sitting there in the same room.
And in the sense of, okay, so that is from your end. Obviously, you working remotely, it's probably opens up a lot more doors for you. But in terms of listening, did COVID change anything? Because I think me personally, I'm not really a podcast person, because I never had a long commute to work. So I live close to work.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of people, some of my colleagues who work with us and live probably an hour and a half away. They do a lot of podcasts. They listen to a lot of podcasts.
Yeah.
Did COVID change anything in that sense? Or did your audience drop a little bit, or did they change a little bit? Or
yeah, good question. I think like immediately afterwards, I think there was a lot of concern in the podcast community for that exact reason. They were like, look, people are stopped commuting. We're kind of screwed, because the majority of time when people listen is going to be going to work. And when traveling is like a huge time. People, you know, go on a plane and they listen. And I think from memory, I think there was something of a little bit of a drop off, but At the same time, it probably was also just to do with the fact that I reduced the output a little bit as well.
Yeah.
So I've always said, look, you know, I don't want to be having to do so many. I don't want to be forced to kind of do so many as I did at the start to kind of get going. And so, yeah, we sort of, you know, settled into a routine.
But you know, thankfully the listeners kind of didn't go away. You know, even if the numbers sort of dropped off a little bit immediately after, because the output wasn't there, it stayed pretty stable. You know, and listeners' numbers are growing. You know, it's like it's already, I've already passed the listener numbers I had for last year. I think I passed them in August. You know, so it's, you know, everything for me, anything else from here is like a bonus. It's like I'm happy, and you know, I'm more than happy with the growth of what's happened, and the quality. I think the quality is still there. I don't think the quality has gone down since COVID struck. And that's always my main thing is quality.
I listened to a few episodes. I listened to actually the one with Nick Darlington as well.
Okay.
And obviously he did a. I heard him even on the radio. I think he
yeah.
went into LBC at some point and talked about things.
This is it. Yeah.
Like, who is this guy? He was from the Whitehead. Anyway,
it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me.
And he did quite a bit, obviously, because a big part of his business is restaurants and the entree. And you did something sort of similar in terms of try to raise awareness about the whole situation or something like that. So what was that about? That summit, what you just did, that's a new way of podcasting.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing it up. You know, I'm pretty sure it's a first of its kind. I put that on the website, so it is a first of its kind audio event. It has to be. So yeah, the motivation, I guess, if we start there, was I guess like everybody else, you know, my mobility has reduced a lot this year. You know, I've been sort of getting out less to taste. You know, there's been no tastings, there's been no sort of conversations and catching up with people and just that sort of flow of information. It's sort of it's definitely gone in a different direction and much less face to face. So I you know, at times I just ended up getting this really confusing picture of what was going on in hospitality. You know, it's like you hear from some people, they were like, wow, August came, it was, you know, the whole year had been terrible up till then, and then Eat Out to Help Out came and it was this amazing thing, it kind of saved us and it was brilliant. And then you'd see other people posting like, that was awful, we got all these, like, you know, customers that didn't get what we were about, and none of our regulars were there, and it was horrible, and we can't wait for it to end. You know, it was just this really, and I guess you'll get that all the time anyway. You know, we're all individuals, but I just felt like, look, let's, you know, in my style, let me dive into the hospitality sector, and let me interview a bunch of people. You know, I just literally, you'll see my board behind me, I just wrote down a hit list of people, and it was about 20 people, and then it went down and down and down and down, and then it ended up being 7. And again, I'm a believer that you know, these things just sort of work themselves out. And I ended up having you know, 2 people from wine, 2 people from restaurants, 2 people, one or couple, the organizers of the London Cocktail Week. And then 2 people looking at retail and events, and so that then, yeah, in the across those 7 episodes, we could really go in depth. You know, we could really sort of, there was no 2-minute sound bites on the news, and you know, which I'm sure Nick Darlington probably aced even a two minute sound bite. But you know, we had like hour long conversations, and the best thing of all though was that I was able to do them in person. I was able to do some of them in person. So, you know, things were sort of opening up there. And beyond that, there was also, yeah, there was some innovation, I think, in terms of up until that point, I'd never actually put anything on a website. It always had just been, look, if you want it, it's on your podcast player, you know, kind of, there you go, take it and go, you know, take it and listen. But I made an effort to kind of build a resource home for the episodes and to do like some transcripts and you know, to actually have a destination there, and then have like an email sequence go out to people that said, hey, you know, today's episodes are coming out now, and I release them, you know, wine on Monday, restaurants on Tuesday, cocktails on Wednesday, and then retail and events on Thursday. So it was like every day had a specific theme and a color, and it was like you were coming on this week-long journey with me to kind of explore hospitality through the people who are amazing, you know, the people who are actually doing it. So
we're involved in this, the whole thing.
This is it, yeah. You want the experts, you want the people who are actually at the coal face. And it was like, you know, that's another thing. I just feel very honored, really, that, you know, through the platform, I can pretty much, you know, within reason, or maybe just within my own desire. What's that?
Sorry.
not a glass, hopefully.
No,
that wasn't your Pinot going everywhere on the floor.
It's
okay.
These are the things which you don't want to hear in a podcast, because you have to do
sometimes I leave them in, though. This is the thing. My friend Gareth, who I think he just wrote he's going to have dinner. But he told me that, because in one of the very early episodes, it was back in episode 15, I was interviewing Honey Spencer in what was the restaurant she was then working in called Nula. And we did the interview downstairs, and I think we were near the kitchen, I think from memory, or we were sort of, you know, a little bit out of the way. And then right at the end of the interview, the fire alarm went off. like literally, it was pretty much the last sentence of the podcast, and the fire alarm went off. I left it in there, and I had a few people say to me that they had the earphones in, and they'd been listening on the train. And then they heard the fire alarm on the, you know, and they thought it was on the train, and they jumped up and they got scared. So
that was good effect, which, yeah. So any plans for any plans for the future? Any plans for the podcast? Do you want to take it to the next level? Do you want to make it like a full time job, a profession out of it, or anything like that? Or,
yeah, I mean, I think yeah, I mean that is the. Yeah, I guess that's the kind of the $64,000 question. You know, maybe a bit less than $64,000 now. But yeah, I mean, that's I think it wasn't at the start, but I think pretty much, yeah, from 6 months or a year in, I kind of figured, look, you know, I think, you know, what could be better? You know, again, it was another Gary Vaynerchuk question. It was like, what would you do if you could choose to do anything every day for the rest of your life and money was no object? And I thought about this and I was like, look, if I could do anything in the world, I would travel around. At the time it was Spain. I would travel around Spain and I would interview winemakers and I would make a podcast. You know, but that doesn't sound like a bad life, does it?
Yeah, you know, I think that's pretty awesome. As long as you have the backings of sort of rich family member.
Well, this is it. You know, imagine, you know, you've got somewhere to sleep, you've got food, you've got transportation, you've got clothes, you've got all the basics. You just travel around all the time, you know, going to different parts of Spain, speaking with different winemakers. That's like some life. So that was kind of where it started. And I think it's kind of, yeah, I mean, I of course, still love Spain and going to be, you know, trying to go there in a couple of weeks' time. So let's see how that works out. I know, yeah, to Catalonia as well, which I gather is pretty in lockdown. But no, I mean, that is kind of the longer term piece, you know. I think there's a real value to be brought to so many wine regions and producers all around the world that are just, they're not telling stories on this platform, you know. And if they, of course, you know, I would encourage them to go off and do their own thing and to start their own podcast. Why not? But I think also that, you know, people advertise in Decanter, people advertise on billboards, and, you know, there's all sorts of different ways of advertising out there and communicating out there. And I think, you know, working with somebody like me through the podcast, you know, to really get that in-depth, you know, contact with your brand and with your messages. It feels like something that, you know, I think people should consider. And I think going forward, there'll be more opportunities.
So do you see yourself as a wine influencer? I hate the word, but it is a thing now. And when you think about, so one thing is, you know, influencers who are, you know, quite often pretty girls. I have to be very careful here, but quite often pretty girls who, you know, appear on Instagram, social media, whatever, in pictures, in small videos and everything. And there's you who... Going to do
not so pretty.
No.
less hair as well.
But what I was going to say is, like, you're doing a completely different woman, and it's obviously for a fairly different audience as well. But at the same time, you are influencing people. So, do you see yourself as a wine influencer, or do you not?
Yeah, I think for me. You know, this is going to be, it's definitely going to be a deeper answer than you might expect. And I think the wine is kicking in. But yeah, I personally think that too many people in wine are too down on the word influencer. I just think for whatever reason, and yeah, the psychology would come in handy here probably. It seems to be like that is the kind of the bad thing, you know, the bad, if you're an influencer, then no, you're kind of down here. And if you're a writer, you're up here, you know. And it's like, isn't a writer an influencer? You know, isn't a master of wine an influencer? Isn't a master sommelier an influencer? I think people have just, for whatever reason, they've latched onto that word and they've tried to put negative things to it. So, you know, I hope I influence. I think I'm communicating, and I think in communicating, you're definitely open to influencing people, aren't you? If they listen to what you're saying, or if they, you know, reading what you're writing, or if they're watching what you're filming, you know, whatever your method of communication is, you're putting your words out there, you're putting your ideas out there, and people can always be influenced by them. I hope I am an influencer. You know, I think we're all influencers. I think everyone's an influencer in their life. You know, forget the wine. It's like we are all influencers, full stop. You know, that's part of being. That's, I think, part of the game of being a free human being. You know, you influence people with your ideas and your energy and your thoughts, and that's wonderful. You know, I think it's a wonderful thing.
Something just came up from Big Table Farm.
Okay.
I think speaking for wine people, we gravitate more towards education than influence because it feels more authentic and less like coercion.
Coercion. I can totally see that. I mean, I and this is maybe, yeah, this is kind of going a bit off piece maybe, but yeah, I personally think that a lot of times it's people being scared of the new thing, and they want to kind of label the, you know, the thing that they don't understand yet. You know, they want to kind of shit on it, basically. They want to say, okay, that person is, you know, off making Instagram videos and we don't know how to do that, so, you know, let's just shit on them. You know, let's just sort of say, you know, put them down. I'm sorry. I do feel that that's not just wine, but I think that more broadly, it's, I think, maybe an intergenerational thing. You know, as you see the new person that does it is younger and quicker. You know, I think it's just the default for a lot of people is just to kind of put them down, rather than like thinking, wow, I can learn something from them. You know, because I think intergenerational learning is one of the most incredible things, and you know where you can learn from people that are younger than you and kind of know more than you do about something else and become the student. You know, you'll have that. You've got a little one, haven't you? You'll be learning all the new dances and all the new already, maybe, I don't know. You know, it's just a continuous circle of life, and yeah, Claire. it's just natural. It's just natural, I think. You know, we're always learning. We're always learning. And
so, just before I let you go, because we are coming up to our time.
We're about to get kicked off.
I just wanted to ask one more question, because everyone knows you as the guy who does interpreting wine. What do you do when you're not doing podcasts? What is your thing? What do you do?
Really, realistically, it has grown now to the point where, you know, like all of my holidays now have been, you know, pretty much since starting the podcast have been to wine regions. You know, I genuinely, you know, it doesn't feel like work. I mean, I guess, you know, I'm sort of aiming for that position where what I do is genuinely what I love. I mean, I couldn't think of anything better than sitting down with, you know, incredible, especially winemakers. I've got to say, you know, I'm always drawn back to people who live in, you know, in sort of more rural communities, live maybe a more simpler life. You know, I just something about the energy just really draws me in. And I just always feel very recharged when I go to those places. So, but yeah, I also, you know, there's also a lot of things that, you know, I'm missing as well from I guess the changes of this time of year and the way that we can't go to like concerts anymore. You know, I've lost count of the number of live concerts I've been to in my life. You know, I love going to concerts and love standing and, you know, love the sort of getting in there and, you know, in a way that, you know, we're not allowed to do at the moment, but, you know, that's absolutely one of my favorite things to do. I like, I follow Arsenal football as well. So I have been, obviously nobody's going to matches now at the moment, but yeah, definitely following them and, follow them. You know, they're doing well at the moment, which is great. They're sort of they're back. But yeah, just I like food. I like, you know, drink. But, you know, I think that's one of the most amazing things is that in my free time, this is what I do. You know, I love talking about wine.
Yeah,
it really, you know, these like last 3 years have just gone by so quickly. But I'm sort of, yeah, I'm always, you know, this is a fairly new thing since the start of lockdown, but I kind of have to have it because I always have new ideas. And the thing that I'm like so passionate about is just, you know, getting these stories out there, reaching more people and helping more people. And, you know, I really feel like I've carved out a niche there. I've carved out an area and a channel in which I'm able to help lots of people, tell lots of stories, and it's like, yeah, I'm kind of addicted, if you like. I really am.
Yeah, I mean, and we're looking forward to hear more of these stories. And then I just wanted to say thank you for taking the time to have a chat with me. And
no worries. No, it's an absolute pleasure. It's an absolute pleasure. Good, yeah. I was just going to say good on you for doing what you're doing. I know this is the other thing. It's like exactly the same as with podcasts. It's like there's lots of other people that do, you know, amazing lives. You know, Brad has been, you know, Wine Time London. He's been incredible during lockdown, you know, just like really, you know, putting in the hours, getting the work out there. But you know, it's open to everybody. It's not, you know, if that's your thing, if you want to do lives, then go for it. And as you say, you can reach people. And I would almost just add on one more thing. My impression, rightly or wrongly, my impression is that people are more, you can get to basically bigger people, I think, if you go through a podcast, than video. I mean, it just feels like where people get conscious of being on video or being photographed, you don't get that with podcasts. It's just the audio, so people tend to relax. And I think it's why I and many people get more out of people when it's just the audio. You know, they're not thinking about their hair or their, you know, their makeup or anything. They're just thinking about talking, and that helps, you know. Multitasking is difficult.
I don't know if you, we only have like a couple of minutes left.
Okay, okay.
I don't know if you had a chance to interview Derek Mossman from Garage Wine Company yet.
No.
Chilean winemaker.
Anyway, no.
He's brilliant. Ski instructor turned Chilean winemaker, Canadian guy. Anyway, he's going to be on next.
Okay.
On election day with me on 3rd of November.
Okay.
As he put it, the time when America ceased to exist. So anyway, very much looking forward to it. And I wanted to say big thanks for you for joining me.
Anytime.
The good work.
Yeah, anytime. No, it's been really good fun, and I hope people have enjoyed and can look back. But yeah, I just think, yeah, if you're wanting to get on and have a little look of, you know, what it takes to do a podcast, interpretingwine.com/kit, please have a look. Any questions, hello@interpretingwine.com, Interpreting Wine on Instagram and Facebook, at Wine Podcast on Twitter. Okay. All right.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Amazing. Okay.
Have a nice evening.
Yeah, you too. Okay. Lovely to see you, mate. Lovely to see you. All right. Take care. Thanks again. All right.
Thank you so much, Chubba, for inviting me on. As I'm sure you can tell, it was a real pleasure chatting with you. And great to get out some new ideas through your channel. Do be sure to follow Noble Green Wines on Instagram, where you can find details of Chubba's regular wine chats. All of the resources that I mentioned in the interview are listed below in the description. And I'd highly recommend, if you want to hear from Claire herself, just head to interpretingwine.com/385 for her interview. And if you're not already, I would love to have you following along with me on social media, where I'm at Interpreting Wine on Instagram and Facebook, at Wine Podcast on Twitter, and email hello@interpretingwine.com. See you next time.